Fellas, there's certain things a girl has to have in a relationship. She has to have it. We don't feel this way. And girls, what you need to understand is, listen to me, we are nothing alike. The difference between male and female goes way beyond whether you stand or sit. Way beyond the plumbing. We aren't geared and wired like you at all. And you're not geared and wired like us. We don't think the thought. You think things we never even think. And when you tell us, we're just we just look at you stunned because we don't even know where you're coming from. Let me tell you one thing that you girls do. You impute to us thoughts that we've never had. You're always saying things. I hadn't counseled but about 1,000, you know, in the last few months. You know, you're always saying things to us like, you did that because, and then you tell us why we did it. And the thought never even occurred to us. No, we just did it because we were stupidly selfish. It wasn't planned and schemed. We're just clods. You got to understand, we don't think. We just blunder ahead. And you're always trying to say, you said that because, you did that because, and then you come out with this thing. Look, we don't even know where you're coming from with that. We're lost. We're not that inventive. You just got to understand, we're just simply not this inventive. Okay? I hope that'll help you. Now, I say that because there's something about us, you girls, that we're not aware of either. All girls naturally, part of the marriage, part of the betrothal, part of the romance part, the whole thing. One thing that's very important to girls, and it is to feel safe and secure. It is, I feel safe. I am secure. He makes me feel that way. I don't have fears and frustrations that, you know, I feel comfortable. Well, that's what he's doing for her right now. She has already told us about her insecurities, her lacking, and it's very foremost in her thinking. And he's doing everything he can with words here. He says, To make her feel that way. And he succeeded. Look what she says here in verse 3. I sat down under his shadow with great delight. He's the apple tree. Did you see that? He's the apple tree in the forest. And she feels protected, safe, comfortable under the shadow. Under his shadow. And with great delight. And his fruit, she's comparing him to the apple tree, was sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love. Now listen, let me tell you about that. You know, at all the good charismatic meetings, you got to sing that one. Now you Baptists, you may not know this one, but you go to a charismatic meeting, you're going to hear this put to music. Let me tell you what he's saying there, and I know you girls are going to appreciate this one. The girl is saying this. The banner, this banner it's speaking of is a military banner. When the armies went in, each tribe of Israel had their own flag. And they marched under those banners. They fought under those banners. Today we still do the same thing. The American flag, you know, the Canadian flag, whatever. And so just like this banner would declare to everyone just who you were. You come in, you go to the Democratic Convention under the Texas flag. They all know who you are. You're a Texan. You're with the Texans. And there's a certain belonging in that. And what she's saying is, he brought her to his banqueting hall and wasn't ashamed of her. He put a banner over Not a real banner. It was love. He was so affectionate, so caring, that everyone there, you know, you can just see them all there. Who's the black, dark-looking girl that's got the smudge on her face that Solly's with tonight? You know, definitely from the wrong side of the tracks. But as you watch how Solomon treats her, how he lets everyone know she's special. Now, girls, you know, I feel sorry for the 90s girls. I want to tell you why. They're having to find out what we boys have had to put up with for years. It's crushing to be told no. Girls, we used to screw up our nerve to ask you out, because you might say no. And I'm going to tell you something. Male egos don't handle the no word very well. Did you hear that? We don't handle the no word very well. We start off as little kids that way. You tell a little bitty two-year-old boy no and see what happens. Screams, won't breathe, butts his head on the floor, just sits down, just collapses. Oh! Saw one do it today. And today, with girls beginning to ask boys, the downside of that is you're going to hear no. It's crushing. It's devastating. God never wanted you girls to have to hear that. But I remember, and I'm sure it won't take too much from any of you, I remember back in school, college, there were girls that were, we used to call easy. I think we all understand the vocabulary there. Easy. And these kind of girls, see, you didn't take them to the banquet. See, you didn't show up at the junior senior prom with these girls. You took them on a date to some dark place because you didn't want anyone to see you with her. But she says that's not the way Solomon did her. It was his treatment of her in public that she greatly appreciated. And it was that public treatment that is beginning to make her feel more and more accepted in his presence. More and more the distance between them is fading. Now, the distance, do y'all understand? The distance really exists, right, between us and God? Come on, gang. The distance is really there. But as we read these words and see how precious we are to him, when I'm caught up reminded how much he loves me, I forget the distance. And I enjoy the presence. Are you hearing that? Do you see what I'm saying? Some of you, I feel sorry for some of you. Some of you. See, it's not, I've got to be very careful how I say this. David, I don't want this to come across like I'm trying to say I'm more spiritual. But I've got something that most of you don't have. Because of the time I spend with the Lord, I do know how precious he views me, and that keeps me pumped. Do you hear that? See, in other words, it's not that there's anything special about me, but I believe this junk. I believe it. And most of you never even read it. Oh, glory. So see, I've been knowing for years how precious God thought I was. And for these same years, many of you have been sitting around thinking, oh, God, do you love me? And you see, the reason you feel so badly about that is he wrote it and you won't read it. See, he's just sitting there saying all day long, look, listen, y'all, those words don't disappear. That's ink. You go, are you with me? It's there all day long. And if you're feeling miserable about how God feels about you, hear this, beloveds. It isn't his fault. He not only gave it to the prophets, he has preserved it. And as I read these verses, David, I am absolutely confident every word is just as given by God. Isn't that wonderful to know that we can read it and not be sitting here wondering, I wonder if maybe it didn't really say that. Maybe there's a a few negatives before that that the scribe forgot to write down correctly. He brought me to the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love. His love was like a flag waving so that everybody there realized how precious I was to him. Isn't that what we really want? Isn't that what we really want? Is for people to know that God thinks we're precious. Think about it. Let me put it to you a different way. If you don't love me, something's wrong with you. The king thinks I'm precious. Did you hear that? See, right away you begin to see that what's wrong in Christianity. But see, Bob, the king feels this way about Bob. Now, if I don't love Bob, something's wrong with me. I have the problem. Because the object is for us to line up with the king. The king loves you. I love you. I've lined up with the king. Shows I've got good taste. Did you hear that? I'll put it to you brutally. If you love me, you're in good taste. Because the king loves me. Right, Charlene? But Charlene, the king loves you. So if I love you, it shows what good taste I have. I'm agreeing with the king. Rose, how about those apples? All right. Then, hey, this poor girl is about... This is almost like when I was a kid. I was 4 years old when Frank Sinatra first hit it big. And I had older cousins that were like 12, 13, and 14, and it was sickening. They would swoon. And it was, oh, Frankie! You know, and I just could not understand this. At, you know, 4 and 5 years old, this made no sense to me whatsoever. And frankly, it still really doesn't. But, you know, at least this girl, the verses we're about to read now, is she's going through that. Okay? I mean, it's an old Frankie swoon type thing. She says, uphold me, sustain me with flagons, comfort me with apples, for I am lovesick. I am sick with love. Give me something to calm my stomach. I'm sick with love. My stomach's doing flip-flops, she's saying. His left hand is under my head. His right hand doth embrace me. Okay? Now comes the first of the big refrains. This is the first major refrain that's different from all the others. In this refrain, Solomon speaks. The effect is as much as she has swooned. You know, she just said, he's got his arm under me, he's embracing me, and now Solomon speaks and says, I charge you, O you daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose and by the hinds of the field, that you stir not up nor awake my love. See, she's the love. That's how you know who's speaking. Till it please. Don't disturb. He just put the no disturb sign up. Okay. Now there's three of these refrains. Three times it says this in here. That refrain ends part one and begins part two. Are you with me? That's the refrain. We're going to see that refrain showing up over and over. And when it does, something ended. And every time the refrain, the next thing is Solomon shows up. Solomon speaks. Verse 8. Now, listen to me. Remember the girl, it's her wedding day, and she's letting us in on how it all happened. Okay? This is when he comes and proposes to her. This is the betrothal. The voice, now the girl is speaking, but she's talking about him. The voice of my beloved! She hears him coming. Behold! What did I tell you about behold? Biggie's fallen next. Behold, he skipped. He cometh, leaping upon the mountains, skipping upon the hills. My beloved is like a rower, a young hart. Behold, he stands. See, beloved, behold he. Remember I told you. I'm just trying to show you how you can be sure that I didn't kid you, that I didn't lead you astray. My beloved is like a rower, a young hart, young deer. Behold, he standeth behind our wall. Ah, he's come to visit her at her parents' home. And they have their wall. You know, that's where they meet. You know, after they eat lunch, maybe with mom and dad, I'll meet you at our wall. Okay? Our wall. Now, if you don't understand this, I mean, come over to Mississippi. I'll tell you, you know, we knew how to woo a gal over there. Okay? See that good-looking black-headed gal? I wooed that gal. Okay. Amen. Behold, he standeth behind our wall. He looketh forth at the windows, gazing through the lattice. He's peering through the lattice to find her. Now listen to me. Did you get that? That's how Christ feels with and deals with us. He's peering through the lattice at us, looking for us. Where is she? Where is she? Like a lover that's come. Okay? Now the girl goes on, but she's telling us what Solomon said. In other words, Solomon is doing the talking, but in one sense, but the girl is just telling us what he said. My beloved spoke and said unto me, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. Randy, sneak previews and shades of the rapture. Rise up, come away. Watch him, he's going to do it again. Why so? Now remember, he's saying, come away with me. This is a proposal. He says, for lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone. It's springtime. Can you see what he's saying? It's springtime. The flowers appear on the earth. The time of the singing of birds has come. The time has come. That's what he just said. The time has come. Come away with me. The fig tree, oh my stars. Come on, gang. If you can't see these subtle prophecy comments here. The fig tree putteth forth her green figs, and the vines with the tender grapes. Give forth fragrance is what it means there. Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away. He asks her again. And then he says, oh, my dove, who art in the clefts of the rock. Okay, now let me tell you. Doves in Israel especially live in the limestone clefts. And there's crevices. And the doves get up in there. And up in there, they're safe, sheltered, protected. And what he's saying to her is, you're going to have to leave home, the cleft of the rock, where you're safe with mom and dad. Well, of course, dad's gone, but mom and the brothers, okay, who put her to work out in the field. But at least she's safe, you know. Yeah, I know, but at least she's safe. I mean, at least she knows where she, you know, she's used to it. She understands it. She's comfortable with it. She knows what's going to happen when she wakes up and when she goes to bed. He says, oh, my love, who art in the clefts of the rock. He says, safe, that's safe from the storm. In the secret places of the stairs. Sneak previews of coming attractions. The Jews hiding down in Bozrah and Petra. Hiding in the clefts of the rock. Remember, this is also about Israel, God's bride. All right? Let me see thy countenance, let me hear thy voice, for sweet is thy voice, and thy countenance is comely. Now, this next part, she speaks. It's not the clearest, you know, but I believe she's the one speaking it. Now, if you disagree with me, it would be okay. This would be one that I'm, up till now, I've felt pretty good about everything, is what I'm saying. Now, I believe she's speaking. And here's what she says. Now, in other words, here is her reply to him saying, come on, let me take you away from all this. Arise, now's the time. Let's do it. Let's go get married. Leave home. Come on. It's springtime. My blood is pumping. All right? Arrgh! I like this guy. All right. She says, take us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our vines have tender grapes. Like, so you could build fences to keep out the big foxes, the grown ones. But those little ones could just sneak through the smallest things you could imagine. And they could do a lot of damage to crops, especially the vineyards. Okay? And so what she's saying, see, this is poetic. What she's saying is, she's asking Solomon. See, he's asked her to come marry him, okay? She's asking him by this statement to remove even every little thing that might spoil the vine like the little foxes. She's calling on him to take care of everything, make her feel complete, put her heart completely at ease that he's going to take care of everything. Even the smallest, most insignificant thing that might spoil what they've got. And she continues saying, "My beloved is mine, and I am his. He feedeth among the lilies." You see where it says, "He feedeth among the lilies"? The context is, he feedeth his flock, his sheep, among the lilies. In other words, think about it. What's he doing feeding among the lilies? They're not picnicking here. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Remember, she still only knows him as a shepherd. That's the point I'm trying to drive home there. All right? Until the day break, now she's letting us know, look, he's just asked her to marry him, and now she is sharing with us what's pounding in her heart. Until the day break and the shadows flee away, turn, my beloved, and be thou like a roe or a young hart on the mountains of Bether. She's saying, I've got a Vulcan heat trance going for you too. Okay? In other words, fellas, we learned that girls think about us pretty hot too sometimes. What she's saying, though, notice this part. Until the day break and the shadows flee away, turn, my beloved. It's a longing. What she's saying there is, return. Take me. Make me yours. Let's consummate this whole thing. That's what she's saying. Turn. Be thou like the roe of the young hart on the mountains of Bether. She's encouraging him to be enthusiastic and to get it all done. Take care of everything. She said yes. Rose. She gave him a yes. Now, fellas, I'm glad Shirley didn't tell me that because, you know, I'd probably still be wondering out there, did she turn me down or did she say yes? You know. All right. It takes time. There's time from the betrothal to the wedding. She only knows him as a shepherd, a very unique shepherd. She finally saw that he had some flocks. Okay. And now, girls, we've all experienced it, right? You've met Mr. Wonderful. Rose, there's Al. And he's asked you to marry him. In the meantime comes the fear of losing him when your heart is really out there, right? So she has a nightmare, and she shares her bad dream with us. By night, verse chapter 3, by night on my bed I sought him whom my soul loveth. I sought him, but I found him not. She's having a nightmare. See, she tells us. She's dreaming. Now, in other words, don't get the idea, this is not them shacking up. That's what I'm trying to tell you. She's having a nightmare. He's proposed. She's accepted. And he's so wonderful. Can it all really be happening to me, this miserable little dark-skinned vine dresser, shepherdess? This guy that's just too wonderful to behold? I will rise now. She isn't really rising. This is all happening in her dream. Okay? Because she says, I will rise now, go about the city and the streets, and in the broad ways I will seek him whom my soul loveth. I sought him, but I found him not. Now, Tim, that's happened to you and to me since we came to Jesus. See, this has another meaning. We've all felt like this, that he wasn't there. We sought and didn't find, right? And there hadn't been a time in your life, Clay, when, you know, boy, Lord, you know, I've just got to feel his presence. I've got to. And you just can't grab on. Verse 3, the watchmen that go about the city found me, to whom I said, saw ye he whom my soul loveth? It was but a little while that I passed from them, but I found him whom my soul loveth. I held him and would not let him go. Ah, the nightmare turns into a better dream. She's holding on to him. And there's not any of us in here that are born again that have not had this experience with the Lord. We've had times when we just couldn't make contact. And then, boy, when we did, we were afraid to let go. Boy, we didn't want the moment to end. Until I had brought him into my mother's house and into the chamber of her who conceived me. In other words, that's what she did in the dream. In the dream, she takes him to the most secure place. See, she's still having this insecure problem in the relationship. Solomon's Shrine. Fellas, are you learning anything about girls? It takes a lot of work to make a girl really feel secure. And we're clods. I didn't say you were clods. I said we are clods. We don't know what we're doing. And those poor girls somehow think we do. You know. And so she brings him to the most secure, safe place she can think of. Back to her mother's home in the dream where she feels safe. See, hey, she's thinking, you know, he's asked her to leave mom's place back just here a few verses and come with him. And in this dream, she's having both feelings. She wants to be with him, afraid of losing him, afraid of losing mom, and security. So she decides the best of both worlds is to bring him home to the most secure place at home, mama's bedroom, where she was conceived, where she grew up, playing on the bed with mom and everything, you know. And then, hey, end of this part, refrain two. I charge you, Solomon speaks, O ye daughters of Jerusalem, by the rose and the hinds of the field, that you stir not up nor awake my love till it please. I'm going to just read you a couple of verses till you get it. All right, now, you got that? Verse 6 through 11, one person is speaking. One person is speaking. I told you every time after that refrain, the next thing we see is something about Solomon. Are you ready for this? Shirley, I'm going to paint you a picture. The Bible doesn't say this. I'm now taking a little poetic license, but I want you guys to bear with me on it. I picture the girl in the vineyard. I mean, she's still not married. She's betrothed, but she isn't married. She's still working for her brothers. And I picture her out there disheveled, sweaty, hot, working in the vineyard. And suddenly, here it is. Verse 6. Who is this that cometh out of the wilderness like pillars of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense and with all powders of the merchant? Suddenly she looks up and here are these pillars of smoke coming up. It's so much smoke, it's almost like a fire. But then she sees it isn't. It's actually smoke arising in huge clouds with myrrh and frankincense and all manner of perfume. In other words, an incredible caravan is coming. Who is this? Behold, his bed, which is Solomon's. Good grief! Solomon is arriving in state to escort his bride from her home back to his home for the wedding. He's come for the bride. He told her he would. He told her he would. And there she is. She doesn't know he's the king. She does not realize her beloved is the majesty. Behold his bed. Now this is the one, look, this is the litter that they carry on their shoulders that has the veil around it, you know, that they put the kings and the princes on. See, look at it. Behold his bed, which is Solomon's. 60 valiant men are about it. The valiant of Israel. It's his personal bodyguard. Do you remember in 2 Samuel chapter 23, verse 23, David had his 30 greatest warriors. Solomon has come to get his queen, and he's taking no chances on anything happening to her. No bandits are going to foul this wedding up. David had 30 great warriors. Solly has brought 60 with him to escort the bride back. In case you're wondering how precious you are to the Lord. You remember pretty soon we're going to hear him say, arise, come up here. Okay? Okay? This implies to me that as we pass up, going through, listen, Satan is the prince of the power of the air. Does anyone remember that? In other words, to get to Jesus at the rapture, we've got to go through Satan's little power domain, don't we? Did you ever read in the scriptures that when a saint dies, angels take him to the presence of God? Do you want to know why? They're carrying his soul through Satan's territory to get to paradise, the third heaven. Okay? It's a an armed guard. Honor guard. All right? Behold his bed. Look at it. They're the valiant of Israel. Verse 8. They all hold swords, being expert in war. Every man has his sword upon his thigh because of fear in the night. We wouldn't say it that way, fear in the night. We would say because of danger in the night. You know, that's not a mistranslation. I'm just telling you, we don't quite talk this way, 1611. I'm just trying to make sure you understand. King Solomon made himself a chariot of the wood of Lebanon. He made its posts of silver, the bottom of it of gold, its coverings of purple. Now, this is what he's bringing. Hey, now, they're bringing him in the little litter. But once he gets there, he's going to get her, put her in this chariot, and then he'll ride back with her in that chariot, surrounded by those 60 great warriors. Now, there's more here than that. This is quite a regal procession. I mean, the smoke going up from it, you know, looks like a forest fire. But it's all under control. This is perfumed. It's an enormous procession. The 60 men aren't the only people there. They're just the honor guard. Are you with it? The cover says the midst of it, the middle of the chariot, is paved with love from the daughters of Jerusalem. Says the daughters of Jerusalem we've been reading about have been knitting. They made a covering for the floor out of love and put it in there for them. Go forth, O ye daughters of Zion, and behold, King Solomon, with the crown which his mother crowned him in the day of his espousals, in the day of the gladness of his heart. Oh, the day of the gladness of his heart. This is the wedding day, right there. You just saw what it's going to be like when we see him with whom we have to do. Can you picture this girl is flabbergasted when she finds out the shepherd she's fallen in love with is the king? Are you beginning to understand that she's been working in the vineyards and everything is going to belong to her? She is about to become the queen of the wisest man that's ever lived? Listen, this is how God feels about you. This is how you and I should respond back and therefore feel about him. In other words, because he feels this way about us and because he has told us this is how he feels about us, it should bring forth a positive response from us that we would love him. Isn't it what the scripture says? We love him. Why? Because he first loved us. That's what that whole poem is about. And that's what it's supposed to invoke in you. And that's why you need to be taught about this. Okay? You need to know how precious you are to God. He's in the garb of a shepherd. And he continues this every time he sees her. He's learning and finding if she will love him for himself. That within this story, we will see God himself endorsing the beauty and the purity of marital love. I want to specifically call your attention to one or two little things before we continue. You know, before we get in. Verse 5 of chapter 1, I just want to touch something. The girl is speaking here, and she says, I am black but comely, O ye daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, and like the curtains of Solomon. Here in America, there are many cults. There are more cults than there are Christian churches. Okay? There's a cult that we refer to as the Black Muslims. They made a movie about one of the dead, murdered heroes called Malcolm X. Okay. The Muslims take this particular verse. This is one of their favorites. I just want you guys to know. And you see, they say Solomon was black from this. And from this, they begin to try and develop a doctrine from the scriptures that they are the chosen and that all whites are demons. Well, I know whites that are pretty demonic, and I know some blacks that are pretty demonic, and Chicanos, and Orientals, and you name it. All right? But tonight, you will see the description, and I want you to all hear this. I'm making a strong point of this, Don. Tonight, you're going to see the only description of Jesus, physical description of him, anywhere in the Bible. It's a description of Solomon. But you see, Jesus has already told us it's about him too. And we do know Solomon is his direct lineage, don't we? How many of you know Solomon is the direct family tree to Jesus? You know, it's permitted that you know that. And Jesus has told us this is about him. Now, as we read it, you're not going to get much of a description because it's going to be poetic. But you will be able to tell a few things, and one of them is you'll be able to tell that Solomon, shall I be brutal? Come on, gang. Solomon is a Jew. Okay? He's not a Mexican. He's not a Mississippian. He's not an East Texas boy. Okay? He isn't black. He's Jewish. Now, this may shock some of you, but Jesus, the Messiah, was also Jewish. You know, just in case any of you are anti-Semitic, I thought maybe you need to deal with the fact that the Savior, when he came in the flesh, came as a Hebrew. Okay? And no, there's no difference between Hebrews and Jews, despite the fact that there's another cult called British Israel that teaches that there is. Okay. So I want to, you know, as we go, I try to show you things to warn you, because one of these days someone's going to slap you across the face with one of those. See, I get letters from people in prison all the time, and the Muslims are very strong in prison. And you get all these guys in prison that get born again, and they can't find John 3:16. And the Muslims start laying it on them. Now, the first thing I want to remind you of is, because we're going tonight to get to the wedding part, and into the wedding night, the Jewish wedding, let's put it this way, the ancient biblical Jewish wedding, in other words, Joseph here is married to a Jewish girl that's born again. Where's Nicole? There's Nicole back at the back, she and Robert. Nicole is a born again Jewish girl. And Lewis, you're not here tonight. You missed your chance for me to say something. See, so we're talking about not how people do things today. Understand, Judaism today is a cult, okay? So we don't care how they do it today. What we care about is how they did it in biblical days, all right? So that the biblical ancient Jewish wedding had three stages in it, all right? The first stage, and the first stage had two parts to it, so I'll put an A and a B. The betrothal, or espousal, or, as we say in America, engagement. Now, their betrothal, espousal, engagement was not like ours in America. Here, you could have this happen before you were even born. When you were 2 or 3 years old, your parents could make the wedding. Some of you say, oh, that's dreadful. Oh, yeah? They couldn't do any worse than we're doing in America. I mean, we're picking our own and divorcing. Right. See, no. See, and the reason is a parent will look for something different in a mate than we looked for. Now, stand up, Shirley. Now, there's my wife, Shirley. Now, that girl and I got married 39 years ago, and I'm just going to tell you, I was not born again at the time. She wasn't born again at the time. And I thought of nothing spiritual. I married that girl in a Vulcan heat trance. Okay? Thank you, darling. All right. And so did most people, okay? And so we don't look for the right things. Whereas parents look for things more endearing and lasting. And so in the Scriptures, there was no way out of a betrothal. This was done legally between the fathers of the two children that were going to be married, whether they were 10, 18, 20, didn't matter. And papers were drawn up. A date was established. And the only way out was a bill of divorcement. In other words, if we both got 15 and I found out she had been unfaithful and I wanted out of this thing, the only way out would be divorce. So that I could be in the Bible, you could be divorced, and you never slept with anybody yet. And here we are in America going to church trying to decide what the Bible's talking about marriage and divorce, when we have no concept of what's going on with the way things were done here. Now, in the betrothal stage, two things happened. First, very important. The bride was selected by the father of the groom, or the boy saw her. Remember in the case of Samson? It's okay. Look, Judges chapter 13, remember? Samson saw that good-looking chick, Philistine girl, lost pagan girl, worshipped old Dagon, Vulcan heat trance. You say, but wasn't he a Christian man? Mm-hmm. You say, you mean Christian men mess up a lot? Yes. Look at everyone down at your church but you. Right? Yeah, see, Christians are capable of every sin ever committed. If you don't believe it, read the Bible. I'm always amazed at you Pentecostals. Every time somebody that's supposed to be a Christian sins, you go, oh, well, I can't believe a real Christian would do that. Read the book. Did you ever hear of David? He murdered a man and then took his wife in adultery first. Good grief. I mean, what worse can a Christian do other than fornicate and put a contract out on a guy? Come on, give me a break. What do you mean Christians don't sin? You say, he was Old Testament. Big deal. So you think he isn't going to be part of the bride, huh? Let me tell you, when you get to heaven, God ain't going to have a bunch of brides up there. There's one flock, one fold, one shepherd. Heaven is not going to have compartments for the Pentecostals and the Baptists and the non-denominationals. All right, now listen. Solomon. And on we can go. One thing about the Bible, dealing with Solomon, I need to tell you this. The Bible is very good to us concerning Solomon. Solomon very honestly tells us of his foolish stupidity in the book of Ecclesiastes. I really love Solomon. I'm glad I wasn't he. I'm glad God didn't call on me to write down all my years of wicked stupidity with all the gifts that God gave me. You hear that? You'd be reading about it for centuries. I'm glad to see. But I listen, I've looked. Floyd's name is not here. You hear that? Now, Samson, we get to read about his sins. Okay, but you don't get to read about mine, and I'm not volunteering to tell. It's bad enough that God knows it. It's bad enough that I know it. But, Chuck, I'm not telling you. All right. John, do you understand? And you're glad I don't know all yours. Amen. So, the selection of the bride was extremely important. Then, of course, payment of the dowry. Now, see, we don't have much of a dowry type thing here in America. Bride had to be paid for. Had to be a dowry. Do you know what you were purchased with? Do you know what the payment was for us? The most precious thing in all history. The most precious thing in all the universe. The very blood of God come in the flesh. Then, the second stage in the marriage, we're putting this up here tonight so that you can see it unfold in the story. Okay, are you with me? Eric, once you know this, it's easier to follow the story. All right? Presentation stage. It culminates with the marriage. All right, now, in the presentation stage, and this is important because you're going to see it tonight, at the appointed time, the groom with his best friends, and sometimes the groom would just send his best friends, but he sometimes accompanied also. Now, what I'm telling you tonight, as you start reading the Gospels, you'll see stories and parables that Jesus gave that will suddenly take on whole new understanding for you.